This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Libya and what to do about it is our focal point. The UN-backed Libyan Government of National Accord, set up in 2015, is being militarily challenged by the opposition Libyan National Army, led by General Khalifa Haftar. Instead of reaching a negotiated political solution that could include both sides, Haftar continues to press toward the capital. It's clear to many observers that he intends to capture it and take control of the country. Hello, I'm Jeffrey Young, sitting in for Carol Castiel. With us to define and discuss the situation are two seasoned Libya analysts, Ambassador Jonathan Weiner, the former special envoy for Libya, and Dr. Graham Bannerman. Both are with the Washington-based research organization, the Middle East Institute. Dr. Bannerman is also with the U.S. Institute for Peace. And as we're about to hear, there can be very different points of view within the so-called think tank. The situation in Libya is complicated and it's dangerous. The promise of the Arab Spring and the optimism that came with the 2011 overthrow of longtime Libyan strongman Muammar Gaddafi turned sour as the country descended into chaos, with the situation providing fertile ground for Islamist insurgents and other bad actors who have spread from there, south through Mali and the rest of West Africa. Because of that, the Libyan internal conundrum has become a significant regional security issue, and one that also involves others, including the United States. Well, first, let's get status reports on Libya from each one of our guests. How did the situation get to where it is today? Ambassador Weiner?
Well, Libya has been riven by rivalries ever since the death of Muammar Gaddafi. There are the people who were the winners under the old Gaddafi regime, people who were the losers. They have different points of view. There are East-West rivalries under Gaddafi's rule. The West did much better than the East. More of the oil terminals and pipelines are located in the East, so those in the East would like to see more. General Haftar announced a coup in February of 2014 on the radio, more or less the way Gaddafi had done 40-plus years earlier, and made it clear then that after decades of exile in Northern Virginia, he wanted to take control of the country. So this has been brewing for a while. The government of the National Accord was an effort to try and patch things up, get them to work together. It hasn't worked out that way in practice because people in the East have still wanted separate control over the oil and oil money. And General Haftar has been supported by Egypt, the Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and most importantly, Russia, which has provided him 10 billion dinars, which is worth about 13 billion U.S. dollars, forces to the east over the past 3 years, and that's helped him build a substantial patronage network.
Dr. Bannerman, how do you paint the picture? How do you see Libya the way it stands today and how it got there?
Well, Libya has gone through a terrible time since 2011. It's broken into communities and factions, and people either are trying to make advantage for themselves or they're trying to protect their communities. But the country has not been a country for nearly 8 years now. The question is how best to reassert authority and how bring the country, the people, to work together. The UN-created government from 2016 has had 3 years in power in Tripoli, and if anything, has lost influence, not gained influence. It's sad. The militias still are dominant in Tripoli. They've been there. The fact that the government has to sit in a naval base and not even occupy their own government buildings give you some idea of the weakness there in Tripoli. In the East, Haftar, whether you like him or dislike him, has taken a slow process and has slowly gotten control of the East. He's gotten control of the rival militias. It took him 3 years to get control of Benghazi. It took him 8 months to get control of Derna and eliminate Islamic extremists. Much to everybody's surprise, myself included, in the last year, he's spread out from the East and has had some success in achieving some control and influence in the south and now in the southwest of the capital. So the question is, what do you do with Haftar and what do you do with the government?
Well, Egyptian President Abdel al-Sisi strongly backs General Haftar, as you mentioned, and the Libyan National Army. That's a move seen by some as clearly preferring security in Libya over a semblance of democracy. The United States, as mentioned, has now moved onto Egypt's side, not with the UN-backed Government of National Accord and its Prime Minister Fayed al-Sarraj. I'd like both of you to reflect on this alignment. Has Washington made the right decision by backing Haftar over the constituted government?
I don't think, if I may say, that Washington has yet backed Haftar. President Trump took a phone call from General Haftar and said they have a shared vision of Libya's democracy and its future, a shared view of a democratic future. The State Department, to the best of my knowledge, wasn't part of the decision-making that led to that call, nor is the Defense Department. And I think we have yet to see a clear U.S. policy emerge, because 10 to 12 days earlier, the State Department, Secretary of State Pompeo, condemned Haftar's effort to take Tripoli. So I'm not sure what the policy is.
That's an important clarification. Dr. Bannerman, what do you say in regards to this? Are we on Haftar's side? Are we on the government side? What side are we on?
We have traditionally supported the UN-sponsored government in Tripoli. That is where we have been. That's where our inclinations have been. Our allies, like Egypt, have not been there because Egypt and also certainly some of the countries in Africa have suffered a great deal because of weapons and individual terrorists and individuals coming out of Libya. So those countries clearly have an interest in a stable Libya that can control its borders and no longer is the export of terrorists and weapons. Whether the president's call with Haftar meant a change in policy, I agree with Jonathan totally that we don't know what the result of that means.
When we're looking at Libya, what a lot of people don't understand is that this is not a binary environment where you have a government and an opposition. This is a country that is literally filled with various factions and militias, and they can combine and recombine in various configurations over and over again. And this is what's been happening in past years. Speak to that for a second, because this is a very fluid, shifting environment. Ambassador?
A senior official in one of the royal families of the Middle East said to me, one of the things about Libyans is they can change alliances faster than you and I can change our shirts. Haftar has some momentum. He was expecting, I think, to be able to sail into Tripoli quickly. He announced he was going to take Benghazi in 2 weeks. It took him 3 years. It left much of Benghazi in ruins. Derna is largely in ruins. And to see Tripoli, Libya's largest city, wind up in ruins following a multi-year siege would not be a good thing for Libya. I'm also very concerned about the impact it would have in polarizing the country and potentially creating resurgence in terrorism. People forget that it was the Government of National Accord that worked with the United States to extirpate the Islamic State from its control of territory in Libya. That was not General Haftar and his forces. It was the people General Haftar is now taking on and fighting were the ones who got rid of the Islamic State in Sirte in the central coastal region of the country.
Dr. Bannerman.
I think that much of Libya remains in the hands of militias. Some of the militias are local militias promoting their own regional interest. Others are ideological militias promoting transnational Islamic movements. There's a whole variety, and they change loyalties. What's different is, over time in the East, Haftar has managed to weed out the local militias and the Islamic militias, and now has begun to spread to the south and to the southwest of Tripoli. His forces and his allies' forces now control most of Libya, not the most populated areas, but the geographical areas. The question is, how do you get Libya under some form of government control that will prevent these militias from changing sides, from doing things, from allying with bad people, and also the Islamic militias from becoming another force in the region? It is a long struggle that we all face till this day, and the Libyans suffer the most.
Well, it would seem that for any government to stand up and for any government to be supported, that a government has to have the support and the backing and the obedience, so to speak, of the people. And when you have a situation like you have in Libya that is absolutely shattered into pieces with so many different factions running around the country, how do you come up with a government that people, A, identify with, and B, can show some fealty to? Is this even possible in this kind of an environment? What do you think?
Well, let's be clear about what just happened.
All right.
Libya was less than 2 weeks away from having a national assembly involving representatives of every part of Libyan society put together by the UN, following up on the kind of process that led to the Government of National Accord when Haftar announced his attack and began the attack. Given the timing, it looks like he did it for the purpose of blowing it up. When I was special envoy, I met with General Haftar twice. I met with his sons and military advisor a third time in 2016. And suggested to him that he be part, lead a military council, bring the country together, run for president of Libya following an amendment to their constitution to allow for a presidential rather than prime ministerial system. And if he had the popular support, he could run the country. But to let the Libyans decide. General Haftar was not interested in that formula. He made it clear to me that what he wanted was to enter control of Libya through a mixture of conquest and acclamation. He told me that all Libya's politicians are worthless, that Libya's politicians could do health care and education and that kind of thing, and he would run the country until the country was ready for democracy. So let's be absolutely clear. General Haftar intends to establish a military dictatorship and a dynasty in which his sons succeed him, replicating Gaddafi and the grand Gaddafiist tradition. His goal is to get hold of Libya's wealth that still exists. There are still tens of billions of sovereign funds that still exist, and to have no controls on his spending on that. If he's able to do that, he may be able to impose a system of personal military rule by dictatorship. The alternative to that is negotiated political settlement rather than conquest. Because the stakes are so large, the opposition to Haftar in Tripoli is going to be very, very substantial, has already been demonstrated, because people don't want to live, for the most part, under a military dictatorship who's going to impose personal rule and exile, imprison, or kill his opponents. Now, on the exile and prisoner kill, how do I know that's what he intends for his opponents? I know because he told me. He said the Islamists should all be in prison, in exile, or in the graveyards. And he told me, and I think we all can agree, that the graveyards would be best. I said, I don't think we all can agree that the graveyards would be best.
Because I work in the Africa division here at VOA, the statement, ruling with an iron hand until the country is ready for democracy, covering Africa, this sounds so incredibly, exquisitely cynical. And it's a line that's been used by so many different people in Africa over the decades, that they will rule and rule and rule and rule until the country is ready for something better. And, of course, that never happens. It just stays in the hands of a strong man until that person is deposed or some other military action turns the situation upside down.
General Haftar has been given every opportunity to try and be part of a political solution for Libya. It's not the militias that prevented further political talks from potentially moving a government forward. General Haftar has not been willing to allow that process to move forward successfully. He made commitments to the President of France last year, last May, June, immediately walked away from them.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Ambassador Jonathan Weiner and Dr. Graham Bannerman. Both are analysts with the Washington-based Middle East Institute. Dr. Bannerman is also part of the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington. We're discussing the situation in Libya and the move by opposition leader Khalifa Haftar and his Libyan National Army to topple the UN-backed government of Libyan Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website, voanews.com/encounter. You can also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castillo VOA, or you can connect with us on Facebook by just putting in Encounter. Here's a big shout out for one of our listeners, Abdulaziz Kasali from Zaria, Nigeria. If you want to hear your own name and country on this program, send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or on Facebook, give us a like and leave us a comment. Now let's get back to the discussion on Libya. Well, General Haftar continues his march toward Tripoli. Britain's Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt told the Guardian newspaper on May 7 that, quote, the right way forward is a ceasefire, political talks, and a political settlement. At this stage of the conflict, can such a settlement be reached, let alone considered? Prime Minister Sarraj recently said that General Haftar is attempting a coup with his march on Tripoli. You brought this up before, Ambassador Weiner. Let's revisit this again. Political solution. Is this possible?
Libya can only move ahead and survive as a country through mechanisms of political settlement that include the sharing of Libya's resources amongst all of its people. Libya is a wealthy country, has a small population. There is enough for everyone. That is the only way I think that Libya is going to work. Otherwise, you're going to have the country be contested for forever.
Dr. Bannerman, what do you think?
Well, I agree that only through sharing the natural resources will Libya become a country that the people prosper and people support. The problem is getting there. The problem with the UN-appointed government is that Over 3 years, they've had made little or no progress, even in Tripoli, of asserting their authority or getting an army up and having any prospect of being able to bring under control the variety of militias and groups. In a country like Libya, it's not like the West, and the West can't impose its values. Here in the West, we have the basic building block of society is the individual. In a country like Libya or any of the Middle Eastern countries, the basic building block is the family, the village, the society, and therefore you have a balancing of interest of those groups. So it's not a one-man, one-vote society. So an election that's based on one-man, one-vote may not turn out a society that settles all of the interests of the community. Those communities make their agreements through consensus of building of all the interest groups working together. They have to find a system that does that. And the problem is we in the West want to go in there and say, have a nice election, and that will tell you how to go. It doesn't. That's the problem.
I can refer to back what you said about, both of you said about sharing the wealth. I spent some years living in a Gulf country, and the country that I lived in made a point of every single person who is a citizen of that country gets a share of the country's oil wealth. They get a check every month just because they're a citizen. If you put people a place at the table and a plate of food, the chances are they're not going to pick up a gun. And this share of the wealth works in Kuwait. It has worked in Saudi Arabia. It's worked in other countries. By and large, by spreading the wealth and keeping people happy, they don't take up arms and overthrow the royal family that rules the country. And getting Libya into such a model, obviously, when oil wealth is involved and there's billions and billions of dollars, any particular faction would like to have complete and total control. This is just one of the faults of human nature. Is it even possible to construct some kind of a semblance of a government in Libya that enough people will recognize so that the government can actually function and be stable?
Well, here I blame the Russian-provided state-printed Libyan counterfeit dinars as having a substantial role in the, for the failure of the Government of National Accord, because it allowed the forces in the East, the House of Representatives under Aguila Sala, the Speaker of the House, to refuse to confirm the cabinet for the Government of National Accord and allowed General Haftar to build up a patronage network, which together with his military support has allowed him to engage in conquest. So they have relied on the foreign support rather than the necessity of compromise and deal-making, which would have allowed the country to go forward. Despite that, the UN was still about to have a national assembly which had been painstakingly put together over the past year when General Haftar interrupted that with his effort to take Tripoli. Now, on the issues that Graham raised, which is family and community, tribe, all of those do play a role in Libya. And it's interesting that there hasn't been a wealth of groups in the West saying, yes, let's go, General Haftar. We all support you. We're with you. To the contrary, what has happened is a hardening in the West in Tripolitania against General Haftar, and people who don't like one another very much still joining forces against General Haftar because they want their freedom. And freedom matters, too, and sharing matters as well. And I must say General Haftar has demonstrated no evidence that he's a sharing kind of guy, and that the wealth is going to be distributed broadly.
Let's start talking about possible endgame scenarios. What if General Haftar succeeds in his march to Tripoli and topples the Government of National Accord and takes complete power in Libya? What happens at that point? What kind of a scenario do we have, Ambassador?
Well, the best scenario at that point would be that he establishes military governors more or less everywhere and that there's sufficient support for the stability, that people don't shut down the oil. You don't see large numbers of people flee. The numbers of people he imprisons and kills are limited, and Libya goes on under military rule. That would be the good outcome. The bad outcome would be there would be continued fighting. You would see large parts of the country become ungoverned and ungovernable because you have people resisting his rule as illegitimate. And you also have the risk of a vortex of corruption. and the shutting down of oil fields, oil terminals, and oil pipelines by various forces dissatisfied with the deal they're getting under Haftar.
Dr. Bannerman, what do you think?
Well, I don't think it's likely that any time soon that any force, including General Haftar, will be able to take full control of the country. It took him 3 years to get full control of Benghazi, and that took a lot of negotiations, a lot of force, and a lot of different things. Tripoli is twice the size of Benghazi, and the resistance will be greater there. So therefore, I think we're likely to have a long period of time with significant resistance there. But I want to make one point on the West. Many of the forces fighting with General Haftar are allies from militias who are already in the West. Yeah, there's a large number of those people who are, I disagree with Jonathan on that one, there are those people there. Because these militias have been in competition with Tripoli militias for a long time. There's a lot of things to be resolved. There's also the whole international question is, because not only the militias are local militias, they're also those who have the transnational Islamic base. And that adds a whole different combination. So solving these problems, Haftar won't be able to do it anytime in the future. No one will be. And the question is, how do we get beyond the current stalemate?
And I think another question that has to be discussed in this is, between these factions back and forth, we still have elements of the Islamic State. We have all kinds of bad actors that are using Libya as a sieve, as a conduit, to go down through Mali, to go into Burkina Faso, etc. And this security situation is not just a Libya problem. It is a complete North Africa problem, and it spreads beyond that to the United States and other parties. So how do we gain control of the territory to try to at least contain or stop or mitigate the open flow of bad actors who are turning all of North Africa into a bloodbath?
Well, this has been the rationale for Haftar's conquests, why the French, for example, have worked with him, and in particular, is to counter this. Again, I would point out that the Islamic State's control of territory in Libya was ended by the much-derided Tripolitanian forces aligned with the government of National Accord, working very, very closely with the United States government and the U.S. military, AFRICOM, special forces. And their control was entirely, entirely removed, and that was a tremendous achievement. The reason for a political accord in Libya is in part to enable Libya to move forward as a unified country that could take on all of these security threats rather than wind up in a civil war which could leave it looking more like Syria. And having a Libya looking more like Syria would be a very bad outcome. And it's why the international actors were, prior to Haftar's unilateral decision to enter, to try and take Tripoli, were supporting political agreements and compromises rather than conquest.
And what do you think in closing, Dr. Bannerman?
I think that the Libyan situation is one that the United States should be interested in, but it's very difficult to decide what's the best policy at this time. The UN effort has not succeeded. The idea that you can impose a government on Libya from the outside is questionable at best. The Libyans will have their own reaction. How we get out of the present conundrum is unknown. This all goes back to how we started this, by interceding in the civil war in 2011 in order to protect people, and all we ended up with doing is changing the government and creating the chaos that's there. We have a responsibility, but there's no quick solution.
As we said in the beginning of this edition of VOA's Encounter program, the situation in Libya is complicated, and there are contrasting viewpoints as to what best resolves the situation. My guests have been Ambassador Jonathan Weiner and Dr. Graham Bannerman, both with the Washington-based research organization, the Middle East Institute. Dr. Bannerman is also with the U.S. Institute for Peace in Washington. Sitting in for Encounter's host, Carol Castiel, this is VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young. Join us next week for another edition of VOA Encounter.